Lizelle Beauty Co. creates fuss-free products that work on every skin type using the finest quality, naturally derived ingredients such as wild plum or bilberry seed oil. Like us, they share a passion for the transformative power of nature, and they encourage their employees and customers to get outside to experience it as much as possible. There is a reason their mantra is naturally active. Hey there, listeners. I'm Hannah Such, and you are listening to Nature Bants. Today, we have Dwayne Fields on the show, and I really think he should be the one to introduce himself because I am definitely not worthy. Hey, Dwayne, so nice to see you again.
Good to see you, Hannah.
Please, can you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Oh, gosh. So I'm Dwayne Fields. I'm an Arctic adventurer, explorer and outdoor enthusiast.
And soon you're going to be an Antarctic explorer as well, am I right?
Yes, I'm hoping that at the end of this year, providing I can get a media partner on board, that will help me a lot. So I want a media partner. If I do get to go to Antarctica this year, I will then be able to add Antarctic adventurer to my CV as well.
So where else have you ventured?
So I've been, I've walked across the Sinai Desert. I've climbed mountains here in the UK,
wow.
Some in Europe. I've travelled into the Arctic Circle a few times. I've done things in Mexico, in deserts there. I was part of the first team to kayak around, circumnavigate Jamaica by kayak. I've done marathons and ultra marathons.
That's scary. How did it all come about then? Did you just like, were you born this way?
Oh gosh. Yeah. Do you know what, Hannah? I was born in really rural Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
And the good thing about that is I was outdoors all the time until I came here to England, North London, and eventually settled here in Hackney. And I just remember thinking, the very first thought I had when we got to the house that we were staying at when I arrived in this country, I ran through the house to the back thinking, right, the forest and the trees and the woods must be out the back. And I remember I walked through and I opened the curtains and there was just a concrete space. And I was never so sad as that moment in my life.
Oh my God.
And I just, for me, that was it. That was the moment where I realized, actually, this isn't home anymore.
Yeah.
And I did a lot of the behaviors that I had as a kid in Jamaica. This might sound a little bit silly and I'm not, you know, encouraging anyone to go and do it. But as a child here in England, I carried some of those behaviours here. And one of the things I did was I saw this tuft of leaves in this really tall tree. I think it was probably an oak tree. And remember, I'm in my Jamaican 6-7-year-old kid mentality phase now.
So roaming
I'm still not realising that this is a different world. And I remember I climbed the tree and I knew I was doing something wrong or I felt like I was doing something odd or peculiar because by the time I got halfway up, there were people gathering at the bottom of the tree, kind of saying, are you okay up there, little boy? And I was like, no, I'm actually fine.
Did you start waving back?
I was like, no, I'm fine. I was waving down and saying, no, I'm fine, in a Jamaican accent.
Yeah.
But for me, it was that was a very normal thing to do.
Yeah.
But for everyone around, especially in Palmer's Green, it's not, it's like, whoa, what's this kid doing climbing that tree?
You don't see people climbing trees often, do you? Not in London anyway.
I don't know why, it's free exercise.
Yeah.
But I went up there and I dug around in this squirrel's nest and I picked up this baby squirrel and I brought it home.
You picked up a baby squirrel and brought it home? Is that the thing that you're not recommending anyone else
does?
Yeah,
I don't recommend anyone picks up a squirrel and bring it home.
Good.
It was just, that was the kid that I was.
Yeah.
And I eventually got that kind of my lack of friendships in the early days over here and my lack of knowledge about how things worked here eventually led to me giving up on that kid and just turning into someone that just said, okay, I'll do that because that's what everyone else is doing. I don't know
that's
what the
so
norm
sad.
Is, so I'll just do that thing there.
And I guess that just didn't sit right.
It's never sat right with me. I mean, let me tell you something. I remember the very first lie I told in this country, and it was to make sure I fit in and to make sure I didn't stand out. The very first lie, probably the very first lie I've ever told in my life because I'd never had to lie before.
Mm.
This was the lie. My teacher said, okay, kids, today we're drawing our favourite TV characters. And I still remember the teacher's name, Mr. Michu. And the only friend I had was a kid called Stavros. The kid that, you know, when you go to a new school and they say, right, you're sitting next to so-and-so and they're going to show you the ropes. I was sat next to Stavros and the moment I heard her say, we're going to draw our favourite TV characters, I thought to myself, I'm coming from a country where we didn't, well, my life, in my life, we didn't even have electricity in our house. So I don't know what a TV character is. So I did exactly what every kid probably does when they don't know. They copy the kid next to them. So I did a really poor copy of a really poor drawing of Popeye. And I was inside dying thinking, please don't let this lady ask me anything else about this character because I don't know and it's going to embarrass me. And that just shows you how new this whole world was to me.
Yeah, so it's like culturally so different to where you were. And also like with TV characters, like what I wonder what she was trying to get out of that. Like what was she trying to get the kids to convey? Like,
I mean, I couldn't tell you, but I just remember us stop. The thing is, I remember other kids going up and saying, this is my favourite TV characters. Mm. I like the fact that they're strong. Mm. This is my TV
was
character.
Was this the 80s or 90s?
This was it would have been the end of the 80s, possibly 1990. Okay. And I thought to myself, wow, look, I just don't embarrass me. It's going to be so horrible. I don't want to stand out. I just want to fit in. I just want to keep my head down. And in fact, I found the whole experience of the first year or two being in this country really, really difficult.
It's like a quite formative age as well, right? You're 6 years old. Yeah. You're just like, if I think about my son now, he's six and, you know, he loves life. He's like learning. Yep. He's soaking it all up. And then for it to be just like completely transformed.
The thing is, at that age as well, you feel like you are grown enough to know enough that you know everything.
That's true.
And you just want to, it's so strange that you feel like you know everything, but you understand that there's more that you could know. And your confidence is brimming. And I was so, when I was going into the lunch hall at that age, I was terrified because I was like, I don't recognize these foods.
Yeah.
I don't know which food is the right food to pick. So I would just look at what the person in front of me got and it would be a lottery every day. Mm-hmm. Like, will I like lunch today? Will it be mushy peas that I just won't like? And that's the kind of lifestyle I was living for the first couple of months, if not year or two.
So eventually you settled into life in London.
Oh yeah.
And maybe not in a good way.
No, so I settled into life in London by doing what everyone I saw around me, similar age to me, doing.
I guess that's what kids do, don't
that's
they?
That's how you learn. You learn from your peers, you learn from your elders. But I tended to learn more from my peers because my mum worked really hard, so she was always at work and it would be me and my sister. And I spent a lot of time in the garden when we eventually got one. But when we settled in Hackney in East London now, Stokey, stomping ground, I realised that I spent more time outside in the estates locally. Mm. And I learned a lot about people by being on those estates. I learned a lot about myself, more about myself probably than them, because I realized I was never happy sitting on a bench for 2-3 hours laughing at jokes that I didn't find funny. But I noticed that I did it because I didn't want to stand out. Mm. I didn't want to be exercised. I didn't want to be alone. I didn't want to be, you know, outside of any circle.
That must have been really hard because you were kind of like living a lie, I guess, in a way, like just following along and seeing what peers are doing. And then and then you eventually found your way back.
Yes.
And welcome back. Because you've been making the most of it now.
Well, yeah. Do you know what it is? I think I enjoy being me. And I think the version of me that likes to get outside and get dirty and, you know, pick up that rock and see what's underneath and move that log and see what's behind it. And that version of me is the most honest and true version of myself.
That's really
and
nice.
And I think that's why I'm just happy now.
You just feel happier
I
now.
Do. I can't explain it. I'm happy being soaking wet sometimes outside or being sunbeaten or whatever the weather is. I'm happy out there.
Because you mentioned that you were flying a helicopter recently. Like, how did that come about?
So, fun story. I'm a UK Scout Ambassador. Mm-hmm. I'm really proud of that role. I get to talk to young people. I get to mix with so many different people, find out their backgrounds and talk to them about the struggles and challenges I face. And hopefully they can take something from my experience and, you know, better theirs or speed up their experience or their path to getting back to being the perfect version of themselves. So I got a call saying, Dwayne, would you be up for going and meeting some young scouts who are at various jamborees up and down the country? And I thought, well, absolutely, I would.
Were
I'd
you
love
a
to.
Scout when you were growing up?
So yes, one of my happiest moments actually is when I was a scout.
Oh,
happy to talk about that.
Okay, so it's like a natural progression for you.
Yeah, it's absolutely. It's like a full 360, I guess you call it. I've gone all the way back to being a 7-year-old cub, and I loved it. And I loved it because it was the first time since arriving in this country that I was able to exercise a part of me and show people my strengths. Mm. When I was at home in Jamaica, I used to make everything. If I wanted a toy, I would make the toy. If I wanted a swing, I would make it. And I walked into that scout hut the very first day and they said, right, guys, it was purely accidental why I was there as well. The scout leader said, right, today we're going to be building bridges. We've got some rope, we've got some wood. And I thought, this is it. I know how to do some of the stuff that you're talking about. I can be me now.
Yeah,
so it was amazing. And that was my very first experience. It was so cool.
Yeah, that sounds very cool.
But I got to fly the helicopter because I asked the question. We had the pilot flying us around the country to meet various scouts. Met an amazing young man called Alfie who'd been in a hit and run about 6 months ago, and he's still on the road to recovery from it. Amazing little cub. And on the way back, we dropped off some of the guys. And on the way back, I said to the pilot, look, you haven't got a co-pilot. I'm going to sit up front if it's all right.
You're going to volunteer.
I was like, I'll volunteer to
I'll
do
take this one.
And I went, I sat up front, and the next thing I looked at him, I said, look, I've flown a drone a few times. I've got remote control. I know how to do this.
I've got a PlayStation. It'll be fine.
Hand-eye coordination and feet as well. I can do this. And he goes, all right, well, tell you what to do.
Did you have passengers?
We did. And they were in the back screaming, Dwayne, no, no, Dwayne, please. And I was like, oh, it's just a
helicopter,
guys. Was
it fun? Did you get a buzz?
It was so fun. It was so fun.
The thought of being in a helicopter just terrifies me.
Honestly, it's so much more stable than you think.
Nah, I don't believe you. Nothing you're going to say is going to convince me. Because I get really bad motion sick and I can just imagine it.
But it's not rocking or anything like
that.
It's quite stable. It's quite stable, yeah.
Okay.
So not when I was flying, but when he was.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would be the people going back at the back going, what are you doing?
No, it was good. It was good.
So did you have Bear Grylls in the helicopter with you?
Yeah, so the scouts run something every year called Bear in the air where Bear
Great
flies
name.
Around. It just rolls off the tongue. he flies around and he goes down underground and meets these guys because at the end of the day, he's the chief scout. Mm-hmm. They look to him for guidance. They look to him as an example. And it's always good to go back and meet the people who idolize you. And the people who support you. So he goes out every single year. He visits four or five different jamborees. And this year he asked if I'd be willing to go along. And I said, yeah, absolutely.
Wow. And what's he like as a person? Is he as adventurous as he seems?
Bear is, I think his trouble is he's always been adventurous.
Yeah.
And I think he will always be adventurous. And I think when you meet him, when you sit down, when you talk to him, you realise he's got a real passion. And it's about making things better.
Mm.
Like, the TV show is great. I like it. But I think to really get to see who Bear Grylls is, you need to see this guy as he's interacting with people, man. It's contagious.
Is it?
Yeah.
We need like a hologram of him or something that we can just like transport into schools and places like that to help people like connect with nature and their
his
environment or something.
His motto is never give up. And honestly,
never
he lives
up.
It. He lives it.
He must get tired. I wonder how he unwinds. That's probably another podcast, isn't it?
Yeah. God, it's a whole other
how
episode.
How do you unwind? But we know
how do I unwind? So I have my kids. We go for walks. If I'm outside, I'm unwinding.
Yeah.
If I'm walking through a wood, I'm unwinding. If I'm walking along a path, I'm unwinding. I think I need to unwind from city life because I feel really claustrophobic when I'm walking through the city. Mm. When you look up and you can only see, I don't know, 10 or 15% of the sky because you've got buildings towering over you, it makes me claustrophobic.
So you live in London now, don't you?
I live just on the edge of London.
Yeah. Okay, so you get the whole kind of green belt and stuff.
Oh, yeah, I
enjoy that. Must be really good for you, because it sounds like claustrophobia is not good.
I love it.
So your love of adventuring, I can see where it's all come from, and it's just like amazing story. Tell us more about your We Too project, because I read about this before I met you, and I was like, wow, this sounds incredible. And secretly, I really love Phoebe Smith.
Okay.
Because she writes stories for the Calm app.
Yes.
And that's the only way I can sleep nowadays, is listening to her stories. So it's like a match made in heaven.
She's the only person I know that wants you to fall asleep when she's talking.
Yeah.
Or read her books and fall asleep. So look, Phoebe is probably one of the most fantastic people I've ever met. Weirdly, our story, the way we met is really strange as well. So I think she was following me on Twitter and I was following her back. And I went to give out some Gold Duke of Edinburgh Awards at Buckingham Palace. And we bumped into each other because she was giving out awards in Buckingham Palace that same day. We said our hellos and, you know, our pleasantries. Hi, how are you? See what you're doing. Great. And the next time we met at Blenheim Palace at Country Fire Live.
Just hanging around various palaces.
You're lucky to have me here. I only meet people in palaces. So we met in Blenheim Palace and we start talking after we spoke at the Quilter stand. We sat around talking and I think some of my team had already spoken to her and she goes, oh, I know you're going to Antarctica. Let me know if you want some company. And I said, why don't you come along? And
what she goes, great idea.
Don't say that if you don't mean it. I said, well, don't ask if you don't mean that. And she goes, no, seriously. And I said, seriously, if you want to come, I've just made a decision. You can come along. And from then, it wasn't my project anymore. It was our project. And I think Phoebe has faced a lot of the stereotypes that I face, slightly different ways. She is a woman from a middle class or lower class background, if I can say. I'm sure she won't be upset, from North Wales. And she has faced stereotypes and she's faced barriers as well. I face barriers because when you say to someone as a young black person from Hackney, born in Jamaica, I'm going to walk to the North Pole, they look at you like you're crazy because that's not what's expected. That's not your lane. That's not what you do. And I think Phoebe's experienced a lot of the same barriers where she said, look, I want to go and sleep in all these odd and peculiar places because I want to raise awareness for homeless people and I want to raise money. And people said, well, you know, a woman alone shouldn't be wandering into these places and sleep. And actually, if she has a reason and she has the will, then absolutely she should be doing that. And I think also it's about young girls as well. From her perspective, it's about young girls looking at Phoebe and saying, actually, if she can do it, I can do it. And it's about whoever looking at me and saying, well, actually, if that guy can do it, I definitely can do it because he's no different to me. And I think we just tick a lot of boxes as a team. So for me, it was an easy decision.
Yeah.
Absolutely easy decision.
I love the graphic of you two where you've like spliced your faces in half and stuck it together. It's really weirdly kind of mesmerizing.
It's weird because a lot of people don't notice it until they look.
What?
But no, honestly, it's when you look at the shirt that you're like, oh, actually, it's the both. But I think what it is as well is that the image is there to show that.
It's quite powerful.
When you're part of a team, when you're working together, you act as one.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. And it's also showing that adventure has no face.
Yeah.
The outdoors is for everyone. It's only in the last 10 years or so that more than half the world's population has moved to urban areas. Prior to that, most people didn't live in cities. 70 years ago, I think it was something like 20, 30% of the world population that lived in cities. So we need to understand that we are more at home in nature than we are. Cities are a new phenomenon. We're at home more in nature than we are here. And I think when we've surrounded ourselves by concrete and bricks, we kind of close off nature. And I don't think that's a good thing for anyone.
No, I agree. Now, as you may or may not know, we have a walking app called Go Jauntly. And because one of our main aims in life is to try and encourage you to walk more and discover new places to visit, Shane from Go Jauntly is going to take us through his favourite walks each week. You can find out more on our website or you can download the app. But in the meantime, Shane, what have you got for us today?
Hi, Hannah. Today, I'm really liking the look of Wanstead's Woodlands and Ponds, a walk through East London created by Go Jauntly's own Alan Weir. I've never really explored Wanstead before, but the multiple woodlands that the route passes through look amazing. There are large old-growth trees, a few beautiful ponds to explore along the way. A leisurely forest walk followed by a roast at the pub by Snaresbrook Station looks like an ideal Sunday to me.
Thanks so much, Shane. We're just going to go back to the podcast interview now. I think from the work that we've been doing as well with the University of Sheffield, University of Derby, we're basically helping people to notice the good things in their surroundings. And we did a study whereby some people had like urban walks or areas to go on, and other people had like green things to notice, and then the differences. And it showed that it was clinically significant that people felt better and were able to feel better well-being when they notice nature and being in and around nature. And so hopefully that research, along with a whole bunch of other research, will go on to help cities be designed in a better way for humans, which is why I love like the whole National Park City thing,
oh,
which you're
so good,
involved
isn't it?
With.
Yes. So I had a small part, really small part, but my friend Dan Revan, he's amazing. He came up with this idea to make London the first National Park City. And he's worked damn hard over the past 7 years to make it happen. And for me, it's forget the title. The title's great, but let's look at what he's done. He's opened up a whole new area of conversation. I'd never heard of a national park city before. And the fact that we're talking about it now means people are going to be asking themselves, well, what's a national park? Oh, that's a national. Oh, so is that a national park over there? And what does it look like? Mm-hmm. And the conversation can open up in a way that it would encourage people to go and seek out these areas of natural beauty. Put them to use, utilize them, start walking in them, start looking at how to safeguard them for the future. And if we can do that and get more people active more of the time and spending more of that time outdoors, you're guaranteed we're going to have a healthier, happier population. Hmm. Simple fact, if you spend, there's a correlation between the amount of time you spend outdoors and your health later in life. Hmm. There's a correlation between your vision. There's studies that show that your eyesight is better if you spend more time outdoors.
Yeah.
There's studies that show that your well-being is far better if you spend more time outdoors.
So what do you think we can do to help make more people spend time outdoors?
Oh, gosh. I think we need to go to people where they are. Mm-hmm. Right now, everyone almost is on social media. Mm-hmm. So I think the more we can show them local spaces that they can use and the green spaces nearby their house, because not everyone has the time to get up and spend 2 hours to travel to the Chilterns or 2 hours to travel to a national park. It's about utilizing the green spaces, because I read a study that said it doesn't matter how big the space is, it's how you connect with the space. Mm-hmm. And if you kick off your shoes on a hot summer's day and just, you know, walk across the grass in a grassy area at the end of your road and just utilize that space. Just take a few minutes and relax and absorb the environment and just look at the wildlife. That it could be a butterfly, a bird, even a pigeon. It could be anything. I know we seem to see pigeons as pests, and
it's like
because they make mess in, but actually when they're in their environment, they're really beautiful birds. They're beautiful.
Yeah. Wood pigeons are beautiful.
If you see one of our Trafalgar Square pigeons in the woodland, you will start looking at it in a different light. It's if you see foxes in the wild,
they suffer in the city like we do.
They do. They suffer from the pollution. They suffer from, you know, injuries. They suffer from I don't know. I'm sure they're psychologically damaged as well, because some of them look at me strange. But honestly, the moment you get out there, you start to feel better.
So maybe I think a lot of people are still sort of going on to suggest this now, but like the disconnect with nature is perhaps why we, you know, are in denial about things like climate breakdown and climate emergency.
Absolutely.
I mean, you've walked across the Arctic.
Yes.
Have you noticed?
I'm lucky.
Difference.
I count myself as really lucky. And part of our project to cross Antarctica, Phoebe and myself, is to highlight a lot of the challenges that the global climate faces. So our plan, it's a three-phase plan. I'm going to go back to your question. Year one, Phoebe and myself will be walking 1,600 kilometers across Antarctica from a penguin colony, which has never been done before, because you have to walk 3 days in the wrong direction to start with, to highlight the fact that many of these colonies are dying at an alarming rate. And that's year one. Year two, we're going to bring 20 young people from deprived backgrounds from up and down this country to Antarctica on an expedition ship. Now, I know some people are going to be asking, well, what about all the carbon you're going to be? No, I'm offsetting all the carbon for my trip. And the trip itself is going to be carbon negative. It's going to be the first and only ever carbon negative Antarctic crossing. And the young people will be expected to also make sure their trip is carbon negative by planting trees through one of the schemes that I'm affiliated with. Now, the reason for this isn't just let's plant trees and get it done. It's about you're planting trees, but at the same time, you're learning about the environment as you're doing it. You're seeing the impact that the trees you're planting has. You're seeing the impact that taking a flight has. You're seeing the impact that, and again, it goes back to disconnect. Mm. If you say to someone, an ice shelf in Antarctica, the size of Wales, fell, it's like, oh, that's big. But what does that look like? And what does that mean? When you bring someone to Antarctica and you show them the White Continent and they can say, I've actually put my feet on Antarctica. Now they've got a vested interest. They've seen it. They've been there. They can share that experience with their peers and say, well, look, mate, I've seen Antarctica. It is definitely shrinking. Ice shelves are coming off there quicker than ever before. Penguin colonies are dying. I feel like I need to do something because I've seen it with my own two eyes. And that's the kind of culture we're trying to create. Now, just going back to this people being almost separated from nature and the impact that we have on it. Absolutely, because I think we now get our hit of the outdoors by looking at people on our phones and looking at TVs and watching, you know, Steve Backshaw and other people, when actually we can get involved and go down to our local park and spend an hour sitting on the grass watching, I don't know, a fox at dusk coming out. They are beautiful animals. Just get out there, get active, watch them sit down on the grass, climb a tree. Climb a tree.
Climb and hide in a tree.
Climb and hide in a tree. It's one of the best vantage points.
I love that you mentioned Steve Backshaw because my son adores him.
Oh, I love Steve.
Do you know him?
I do. I know Steve. I don't know Steve that well, but yeah, we've met a few times. And he's amazing because I messaged him once and asked for something.
Yeah. What did you ask for?
I said, Steve, could you do me a video? Because I love the blue-ringed octopus. And I expected that I'd have to wait, I don't know, 2-3 days for him to find some Wi-Fi somewhere. But he got back to me 5 minutes later, goes, right, Dwayne, here's your video. I know you love the blue-ringed octopus, so let me tell you some facts. And his energy is so real.
It is, yeah. It is. My son is completely obsessed with him. And he, to the point now, like him and his granddad, when they go up to Northumberland, which is where they're from, they go and put one of those like night cameras in the fields,
yes,
and like in the woodlands. And then it switches on when there's, you know, wildlife around. And they come back. And like the few times he's been recently, they've never, ever caught anything. But this time he came back and he caught, when I say catch, I mean he caught on camera, two badgers and a sheep.
Oh,
and like a sheep roaming randomly where it shouldn't roam, which is quite funny. And he's even got like these stories about like the speeding badger and like all of this kind of stuff. And it's just, it's so nice to see.
That's what it should be about.
Yeah, it's so nice to see.
That's what you need to do. And his interest in the outdoors, I will bet my bottom dollar will never wane. It will always be there.
I hope so. Because I did read another study that came out of, I think, the University of Derby, which was around how like if children don't stay connected with nature, which is might be what happened with you, after the age of 10, then it takes them 20 years to get back into it, perhaps when they're parents again or something like that, which is terrifying. But I guess, you know, you're a teenager, you've got stuff going on.
Distractions like, and life. That's why it's so important to make nature and the outdoors part of the culture of society. So whether you're young, you know, 1 to 10 or 10 to 19, there is some part of your lifestyle which includes nature. And I think that's why I do what I do, because I want to see everybody out there, regardless of age, color, race, background, creed. I want to see people walking, rambling. I want to see them out there camping, spending a night wild camping. I just want to see people out there making use of the spaces that we have, because if we don't make use of them, they're going to dwindle and dwindle and dwindle, and it's going to be so much harder to get them back once they're gone.
So do you feel sort of galvanized now, like with the momentum, like everything that's happening in the world and like Extinction Rebellion, like making a stand? Yes. And like, do you feel like actually change is about to happen now?
I feel like change is about to happen. I worry about the change, because I always find that when you ask people to do a big thing, if you say to someone, stop driving, don't drive anymore, it's a big thing. If you penalize people for things, they resent you and they resent the outcome quite often. So I think if you ask people to do small things, for example, if you have a garden, leave the very end of the garden wild and see what happens. If you have a green space at the end of your road, visit it once a week, once every couple of weeks. If you have a park near where you work, instead of having lunch in work, take a wander down to the park. Those are the small things that cost nothing. They're the small things that are very doable. They're the small things that people think, oh, actually, I can manage that. And they're the small changes that will make a big difference. If you say to someone, oh, instead of driving to that shop, actually, here's a route. If you walk, and that's the great thing that OS do. OS has tons. I think they've got something like 2 million routes that you can walk. If you say to someone, instead of driving, you know, that way around, why don't you walk through this green space or along this canal? It's opening them up to a new experience, but it's also taking that journey, that car journey off the road.
Yeah. And it's about grabbing friends and family, I think.
Absolutely.
Like, just like socializing in a green space or on a walk, it feels like a really fun thing to do.
We enjoy things better when our friends are there.
Exactly, yeah. And then I guess instead of sitting on a park bench, like you were saying before, it's actually just going on a little jaunt.
Yeah. Do you know what I find? I find that as adults, we are scared to have basic, simple fun. The fun and the joy of climbing a tree, It's like we need a child with us to okay that kind of thing.
You're so right.
How many times have you walked with your friends and thought, oh, well, we're going to do the adult thing and we're going to sit down over there and we're going to spread this this picnic mat out and have... No, actually, why don't you just do something silly, climb that tree and have dinner in a tree or have lunch in a tree? It sounds so silly, but it's a way to make yourself active. It's a way to get some exercise. It's a way to connect, physically connect with nature.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think I've ever said, hang on a minute. Just going to go and climb this tree, guys.
It sounds silly, but imagine if you said it and someone else said, oh, well, I did that yesterday. It was good fun, but actually that tree over there is better. If the culture was where it was okay to do that kind of thing.
That would be really nice. Although what I have started doing and not being afraid of is using those park gyms. Have you tried that?
Yes. Listen, you're outside. Because it's free.
It's free, but it's also like being on a kid's ride.
Yeah.
And it's quite fun.
It is. There's lots more of these adult play areas coming out. Have you seen them?
Which ones? Like bouncing on...
Yeah, like big bouncy things and ball pools. And I'm thinking, that's great. But actually, if you walked into a forest, you'd find a massive play area. Mm. And it's almost limitless what you can do.
Yeah. I think it's like helping give people ideas. Like, I think like the National Trust are doing a really good job of like, you know, like... however many things to do before you're 11 and a half.
Oh, 50
and like,
things to do before. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. And I think, but you could do that. You don't have to be 11 and a half or 11 and three quarters, do you?
You can do it anytime. 50 things to do before you're 27. 50 things to do before you're 32.
I think I made my first den outdoors when I was 34, 35.
was it fun?
It was the best one ever.
I'm sure it
but
was.
But it's just because culturally, it's just not what we used to do as a family. Like, my mum's Chinese, I'm mixed race. And, you know, just like that kind of stuff is just a bit, I don't know, we just didn't do it. But she probably did it as a kid, though. And you just lost. I mean, it was the 80s, I guess. And
I mean, culturally, there's a lot of things that, from my background, black people, I see more now.
Yeah.
But I remember like 5, 6, 7 years ago, I'd be walking through Dartmoor for 3 days and I would not see another black face.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's because it's like, oh, that's not what we do. And I heard this quite a lot, actually. Oh, black people don't do this and black people don't walk to them.
Why do you think that is?
I think the culture that's come to this country with the people that's come, whether it's from Africa or the Caribbean or wherever else in the world, is that we're coming here to work and study and educate ourselves. We don't have time for leisurely activities. And I think that's the mentality that's been passed down the line.
That's interesting.
And in actual fact, leisure, education and work can all be had outdoors. Mm. So, hey, I've ticked all them boxes.
You are definitely pioneering.
Gosh.
Everywhere.
Isn't there like don't I have to be a little bit older to be pioneering?
I get the feeling we might be a similar age.
Yeah.
But, okay. So because we're almost running out of time, which I'm very sad about, but we can try and encourage people to help fundraise, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So what does everyone need to do?
So we've got a fundraising page up. If you go to teamwe2.com. Yep. All the links are on there. That's the link. That's the website for my next expedition, which is to cross Antarctica. It's a 3-year plan. Really looking for a media partner, a good solid media partner.
If anyone's listening,
teamwe2.com. Check us out.
Sounds amazing. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been really inspiring and I hope we get to do this again another time.
Definitely.
Are we going to see you on the telly a bit more, right?
Possibly.
You've got a face for telly.
Oh, good. Thank you.
You so need to be on it.
Thanks. Watch my head start growing. I won't be able to leave this studio.
No, but I'm serious.
Oh, thank you.
BBC Spring Watch?
We'll see. Maybe. Possibly.
All right. Thank you. Thanks so much. Wow. Isn't Dwayne amazing? Please support his mission over on www.teamwe2.com. I really hope we get to see more of Dwayne on the telly, in the news, and well, everywhere. Thank you for listening to this episode of Nature Bants. Don't forget to rate it and subscribe to the whole series.